Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack texts that will really make you think differently.
And today we've got a big one, Michael Sandel's Justice. What's the right thing to do?
A truly foundational book, I think. It might be one of the best guides out there for thinking about citizenship today.
It really is a powerhouse. I mean, the core question Sandel asks is, on the surface, simple. What makes a society just?
Simple question, but the answers, they're incredibly complex. And he digs into the philosophical grounds for our moral choices.
Exactly. And what I love is how he connects it to today.
Right. He argues that so much of our political talk feels, well, kind of empty, doesn't it?
It does. Frustrating sometimes.
And he says it's because we often dodge the really tough moral questions. We talk procedures or markets instead of virtue or the good life.
That's spot on. And that's the book's mission, really, to force us to engage with those deeper values.
So his central idea isn't finding one magic principle for justice.
No, not at all. He argues justice isn't a formula. It comes out of this ongoing, necessary tension, a kind of dialogue, you know.
A dialogue between, what were the three main approaches again?
Between maximizing welfare, the utilitarianism, then respecting freedom and individual rights, and finally, cultivating virtue and thinking about the common good.
Okay, welfare, freedom, and virtue. That tension is where justice lies.
Got it. So who is Michael Sandel, the person guiding us through this?
Right. He's Michael J. Sandel, the auntie, and Robert M. Bass, professor of government at Harvard. Been teaching political philosophy there for ages.
And his impact goes way beyond Harvard Yard.
Oh, absolutely. His justice course was legendary there, apparently, but then became one of the very first Harvard courses put online on TV everywhere.
Which made him this, like, global public intellectual, right?
Totally. He reached millions. And it's not just the Harvard name, though he's got the credentials, doctorate from Oxford, wrote a major critique of John Rawls early on.
So deep philosophical chops.
Definitely. But what makes him stand out, I think, is how he communicates it. He combines that rigor with this incredible talent for making it accessible.
It's that case study method he uses, isn't it?
Exactly. He doesn't start with, you know, dry theory. He starts with a dilemma everyone can feel. Price gouging after a hurricane. The draft versus a volunteer army. The trolley problem.
Those really sticky real-world problems.
And he uses those to draw you into the big philosophical ideas.
Yeah.
Makes Kant or Aristotle feel immediate, relevant. You see the theories at work in situations you can actually imagine.
It's a brilliant way to teach philosophy, actually. Makes it come alive.
Okay, so let's map out the journey the book takes us on. You mentioned the dilemmas leading into the philosophies.
Right, it's structured like you're on an intellectual quest. You hit a tough moral case, and then Sandel brings in these major philosophical traditions to see how they'd approach it.
Like you, the reader, are kind of weighing the arguments.
Exactly. You're trying to figure out which framework holds up best. And he focuses on those three big ones we mentioned. He's fair to them, even when he's pointing out the flaws.
So first up is maximizing welfare.
Yep. Maximizing welfare. That's classic utilitarianism, Bentham, Mill. The idea is simple. The right action is whatever produces the greatest happiness for the greatest number of people.
Sounds practical.
It does. But then comes the second approach, respecting freedom and individual rights. This one's got a few layers.
Okay.
You've got the libertarian angle, like Robert Nozick, who emphasizes self-ownership above all, freedom from interference.
And then?
Then you have a deeper defense of rights from Immanuel Kant, which isn't about markets, but about duty and respecting human dignity intrinsically.
Right. Kant. We'll get into him. And the third approach?
The third one is cultivating virtue. This goes way back to Aristotle. It's about promoting good moral character, thinking about the common good, and figuring out the purpose or the telos of our social practices.
Purpose. Okay, that sounds quite different.
It is. And Sandel's whole project here is pretty ambitious. He really wants to shake up our democratic conversations.
That's so.
He argues we can't really settle big debates, healthcare, taxes, climate change, just by looking at procedures or efficiency. We have to talk about the underlying moral values. Mm-hmm. What kind of society do we want? What virtues should we honor?
So stop avoiding the hard moral questions.
Pretty much. Engage with them directly. That's the path forward.
All right, let's dive into the first big philosophy. Utilitarianism. greatest happiness for the greatest number.
It seems so logical for policy, right? Just add up the benefits, subtract the costs.
It seems logical, yeah. Very intuitive. Cost-benefit analysis is everywhere. But Sandel immediately shows us where it gets, well, uncomfortable.
How does he do that?
He uses these extreme cases where maximizing the overall happiness seems to demand something morally horrifying. The classic one he discusses is the legal case Queen V. Dudley and Stevens.
The shipwrecked sailors.
That's the one. Four men adrift in a lifeboat, starving. Three of them decide to kill the weakest, the cabin boy, and eat him to survive. Grim.
Incredibly grim. But from a purely utilitarian standpoint, well, three lives saved versus one life lost. The math seems to point one way.
But nobody feels good about that math.
Exactly. That visceral reaction, that feeling of wrongness, points to the core problems with utilitarianism.
Which are?
Two main things. First, it just doesn't seem to respect individual rights. The cabin boy is treated as a resource, basically, for the other's survival. His intrinsic worth gets ignored.
He's just a number in the calculation.
Right. And second, utilitarianism tries to put everything life, dignity, suffering onto a single scale. Pleasure versus pain. But can you really measure the value of a human life that way? Sandel argues that trying to do so degrades those values.
Okay, so if maximizing happiness isn't the whole story, especially when rights are involved, where do we go next?
Sandel turns right to the defenders of absolute rights, and he starts with libertarianism.
Which bases rights on?
On the bedrock principle of self-ownership.
Yeah.
I own myself. My body, my labor, what I produce with my labor, it's all mine.
And what does that mean for government?
Libertarians are pretty strict. It means no paternalism. The government can't force me to wear a seatbelt for my own good. It means no morals legislation can't ban things just because they're seen as immoral if they don't harm others.
And the big one, taxes.
Right. No redistribution of wealth, taxing the rich to help the poor. That's coercion, they argue. It's like forced labor, taking the earnings that rightfully belong to the individual because they own their own labor.
That's a strong claim. Does Sandel just present it or does he push back?
Oh, he pushes. He takes self-ownership and runs with it to see if it holds up at the extremes. If I truly own myself completely, he asks, should I be allowed to sell my organs on an open market?
Whoa.
Or, even more provocatively, what about consensual cannibalism? If both parties agree.
Okay, yeah, that really tests the limits. Is everything permissible if it's based on consent and self-ownership?
Exactly. These examples make us question if there are certain things about human dignity that maybe shouldn't be up for sale or shouldn't be violated even with consent. It suggests maybe self-ownership isn't the only important principle.
Which leads perfectly into Kant, right?
Mm.
He also defends rights, but on different grounds.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Immanuel Ankin offers a powerful defense of absolute rights, but it's not based on owning yourself or maximizing happiness. For Kant, it's about duty, reason, and respect for persons.
Okay, break that down. What does Kant mean by acting from duty?
For Kant, the moral worth of an action depends on the motive. Are you doing the right thing for the right reason? Because it's your duty. Or are you doing it for some other reason, like self-interest, or because it makes you feel good?
So intention matters.
A lot.
Immensely.
And the core of his ethics is respect for humanity. We are valuable not because we own ourselves, but because we are rational beings capable of autonomous action. Therefore, we must always treat human beings, ourselves, and others as ends in themselves, never merely as means to an end.
Never just use people.
Right. That's the foundation of universal human rights for Kant. And to figure out what our duty is, he gives us the categorical imperative.
The famous categorical imperative. How does that work, simply?
One formulation is basically this. Act only according to that maxim whereby you can at the same time will field that it should become a universal law.
Meaning?
Meaning, could the principle behind your action be applied consistently to everyone everywhere without contradiction? Could you rationally want a world where everyone acted on that principle? If you're making a special exception for yourself and your action isn't moral.
Okay, that's a much more demanding basis for rights than just, I own myself.
Definitely. It grounds rights in universal reason and respect.
Now, after Kant, Sandel brings in John Rawls, who's trying to kind of blend rights with fairness.
Exactly. Rawls is a giant of 20th century political philosophy, and he tries to find principles of justice that respect individual liberty, but also address social and economic inequality. His key tool is this brilliant thought experiment, the veil of ignorance.
Right. The veil of ignorance in the original position. Explain that again.
Okay, imagine we all have to get together to decide the basic rules for our society. But here's the catch. We meet in an original position behind a veil of ignorance.
Meaning we don't know anything about ourselves.
Precisely. You don't know if you'll be rich or poor, healthy or sick, talented or not, what your race or gender or religion will be. You know nothing about your specific place in society.
Why is that ignorance so important?
Because, Rawls argues, if you don't know where you'll end up, you'll choose principles that are fair to everyone. You wouldn't choose utilitarianism because you might end up being the person sacrificed for the majority.
You play it safe.
You'd play it safe. You'd want to make sure that even if you ended up in the worst possible position, society would still be fundamentally fair and supportive.
So what principles would we choose behind the veil?
Rawls says we'd agree on two main ones. First, basic liberties for everyone, freedom of speech, religion, etc. But second, and this is the radical part, is the difference principle.
The different principle. What's that?
It says that social and economic inequalities, differences in income and wealth are permissible only if they work to the greatest benefit of the least advantaged members of society.
Wow. So inequality is okay only if it helps the poorest.
That's the idea. It's not pure egalitarianism, but it sets a very high bar for justifying inequality. It's a powerful argument for things like progressive taxation and social safety nets.
Okay, so we've covered utilitarianism, libertarianism, Kant, Rawls. Then Sandel takes a sharp turn right back to Aristotle.
He does. After exploring all these modern theories focused on rights and consent, he brings back the ancient Greek perspective, justice tied to purpose and virtue.
This sounds very different from rules and rights.
It requires a whole different way of thinking. For Aristotle, justice is teleological.
Teleological, meaning?
It means purpose-driven, to figure out what's just in a particular situation, how to distribute resources, or who deserves honors. You first have to determine the telos, the purpose, or the essential nature of the social practice you're talking about.
Okay, give an example. How does purpose help decide justice?
Sandel uses this fantastic modern case, Casey Martin v. the PGA Tour.
The golfer who needed a cart.
Exactly. Casey Martin had a disability that made walking the course extremely painful. He sued the PGA Tour for the right to use a golf cart in tournaments under the Americans with Disabilities Act.
And the Supreme Court had to decide. What?
They literally had to debate the telos of golf. What is the essential purpose of the game? Is it just about getting the ball in the hole with the fewest strokes? Or is walking the course, the physical endurance part, essential to what golf is? Is that a virtue the game honors?
So the court was doing Aristotelian philosophy.
Unknowingly, maybe, but yes. They had to make a judgment about the purpose and the virtues central to the game to decide if denying Martin the cart was unfair discrimination. It shows how this ancient idea of telos is still alive in our legal and moral reasoning.
That's fascinating. And this links to other debates too, right? Like affirmative action.
Absolutely. Debates about affirmative action force us to ask, what is the purpose of a university? Is it just to reward academic merit, defined narrowly? Or is it also to promote diversity or remedy past injustice or train future leaders? Different purposes lead to different conclusions about what's fair in admissions.
So you can't decide what's fair without deciding the purpose first.
That's the Aristotelian argument Sandel brings back to the table. Justice isn't just about rules. It's about figuring out what we're trying to achieve together and what qualities we should honor.
Okay, that's a huge amount of ground covered. If you had to boil it down, what are the absolute key takeaways Sandel wants us to get from this whole journey?
I think there are three big ones that really stick. First is just the inescapability of moral reasoning.
Meaning we can't avoid values.
Right. Sandel shows again and again that even when we try to talk about policy in purely technical or economic terms like tax rates or healthcare efficiency, there are always moral assumptions hiding underneath.
Assumptions about fairness or rights or what we owe each other.
Exactly. So the takeaway is, listen for those hidden moral claims. Ask yourself, what's the underlying value being defended or ignored in this argument? We can't escape values, so we should debate them openly.
Okay, that's number one. What's next?
Second big theme, the moral limits of markets. This is huge for Sandel.
So not everything should be for sale.
That's the core of it. He argues that markets aren't neutral tools that just allocate goods. They also express and promote certain attitudes towards the things being traded.
Oh, so?
Think about things like paying people to stand in line for congressional hearings, or mercenary armies, or surrogate motherhood contracts, Sandel asks. Does putting a price tag on certain goods or activities corrupt or degrade them? Does it change their meaning in a way that's damaging?
So a voluntary exchange isn't automatically a just exchange.
Precisely. We need to ask what things money shouldn't buy, what aspects of life should be governed by non-market norms. It forces you to reflect what in your life is truly priceless.
Powerful question. Okay, third theme.
The third one is his critique of what he calls the unencumbered self.
The unencumbered self, meaning?
Meaning the idea, common in some liberal thought, that we are fundamentally free-choosing individuals, independent, unbound by any prior moral ties we didn't choose. Like we just arrive on the scene and pick our values off a shelf.
And Sandel disagrees.
Strongly. He argues, drawing on communitarian ideas, that we are actually situated selves. We are born into families, communities, nations with histories. We inherit traditions, loyalties, and sometimes, unfortunately, historical burdens or obligations we didn't choose.
Obligations of solidarity, like to family or community.
Yes, or even obligations stemming from historical injustices committed by our group or nation. These unchosen ties are part of who we are, he argues. They shape our identity and our moral responsibilities.
That really pushes back against pure individualism, doesn't it?
It does. It asks you to think how much of who you are and what you feel responsible for comes from your voluntary choices, and how much comes from these deeper, unchosen connections to your past and your community.
One thing about the book is how quotable it is. Sandel has a real gift for summing up these complex ideas in memorable ways.
He really does. There are lines that just crystallize the whole argument.
Let's share a few. What's one that captures the core idea of justice itself?
I think this one does. To ask whether a society is just code is to ask what it owes its citizens as a matter of right and what citizens owe one another.
That focus on reciprocity, what we owe each other. Not just what I'm entitled to.
Exactly. It shifts the focus from pure individualism towards mutual obligation, which is central to his view.
What about one on the market limits theme?
This one nails it. Markets don't only allocate goods, they also express and promote certain attitudes toward the goods being exchanged.
Right. That explains that uneasy feeling when certain things get commodified. It changes how we think about them.
It does. Putting a price on something can alter its intrinsic value or meaning.
And maybe one more. Capturing that need to debate values.
How about this? Justice is not only about the right way to distribute things, it is also about the right way to value things.
Ah, so it's not just about who gets what slice of the pie.
No, it's also about debating what things, what virtues, what activities, what goods are actually worthy of honor and respect in the first place. It calls for moral judgment, not just distribution rules.
Mm.
So beyond understanding these big ideas, how can Sandel's framework actually help you in, you know, everyday life?
Great question. I think for personal ethics, it gives you a really useful mental checklist when you're facing a tough decision.
How so?
Well, instead of just going with your gut, you can consciously ask, am I thinking about this mainly in terms of consequences, like a utilitarian?
Going weighing outcomes.
Or am I focused on a fundamental right or duty, like Kant would be?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a principle at stake here?
Respecting rights.
Or am I thinking about what kind of person this action will make me, or what the purpose of this activity is, like Aristotle? Am I cultivating virtue?
Considering character and purpose.
Right. Looking at the dilemma through all three lenses, consequences, rights, virtue almost always leads to a richer, more thoughtful decision, I find.
That makes sense. And what about for being an engaged citizen? For civic engagement.
Oh, it's like getting decoder glasses for political arguments.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you can hear the underlying philosophies clashing.
You can see the libertarian argument about self-ownership versus maybe the Rawlsian argument about helping the least advantaged.
Exactly. When people argue about taxes or welfare or regulations, you can identify why they disagree on such a fundamental level. It's not just different opinions. It's often different philosophical starting points. Recognizing that helps you engage more productively, maybe even find common ground, or at least understand the real disagreement.
That's incredibly useful. What about in the workplace, professional or organizational ethics?
I think the Aristotelian idea of telos, of purpose, is huge here. Leaders should ask, what is the fundamental purpose of our organization beyond just making money?
What are we really trying to achieve?
Yeah. And what virtues should we embody and reward? Integrity, innovation, community service, sustainability. Defining that core purpose, that telos, can genuinely shape everything from corporate strategy to how employees are treated.
So it's about aligning actions with a deeper sense of purpose.
Absolutely.
Okay, wrapping up. If you had to pick one final takeaway, what impressed you most about Sandel's work here?
For me, I think it's his ultimate message. It feels quite optimistic, actually. He insists that moral reasoning isn't some obscure skill only philosophers have.
It's something everyone can do.
Yes. He argues it's both unavoidable, we do it all the time anyway, and learnable, we can get better at it. So his call isn't to shy away from moral disagreement because it's messy.
But to lean into it.
Exactly. Engage with it respectfully, honestly. That's how democracy gets stronger. The goal isn't necessarily to find the one single right answer that satisfies everyone.
What is the goal then?
It's about developing what Aristotle called phrenesis, practical wisdom. The ability to navigate complex situations with moral insight, to deliberate well about the common good. That's what he hopes the book cultivates.
Practical wisdom. I like that. What about you? What's your final thought?
What really blew me away was seeing how questions that seem so modern questions debated by the Supreme Court, like in the golf cart case, are actually ancient philosophical questions.
Questions about purpose, fairness, honor.
Exactly. Thousands of years old. It just proves how incredibly relevant philosophy still is. It's not dusty or abstract. It's right there in today's headlines, shaping our laws and our lives. Sandel makes that connection brilliantly clear.
He really does. It's a book that stays with you.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.